Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Good evening. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. My pleasure to be with you this evening. We're here with Kirk and Dee. It was a hellacious day today. The number was 143-9. Mm-hmm. Now, there are some 50 nations, Muslim nations, where Satan is God. And you would expect them to do the wrong thing under any circumstance. So you can see perhaps why 50 nations would vote on behalf of rapists and slavers and parasites and kidnappers, torturers, service in mass murders. But it is very difficult to comprehend how Western nations could be so grotesquely immoral, so lost, so ill-informed, so irrational, that after October 7th, where fundamentalist Muslims, not call them Hamas, let's call them what they are. They are good Muslims. All good Muslims are terrorists. The Quran says so. It is impossible to be a good Muslim and not be a terrorist. Good Muslims came into Israel for no reason other than Allah declared war on the Jewish people 1,400 years ago. And there's extra bonus points for killing Jews. Muhammad and the first Muslims annihilated every Jew in Arabia 1,400 years ago, beginning in Yathrib and then moving to Kabar. Not only murdered the men, slaved the children, turned the women into sex slaves, robbed their homes and assets, and then gloated about it. What we witnessed on October 7th was nothing but a rehash of what occurred in Yathrib and occurred in Kabar. And yet, in spite of that, the United Nations is such a corrupt organization that they voted overwhelmingly to award a state to the terrorists, to the mass murderers, to the slavers, to the kidnappers, to the rapists, to those who aren't civil, don't even belong with the rest of the world, who worship Satan as their God. 143-9 after such an atrocity. And to add insult to injury, they called the goddamn place Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
There has never been a Palestine. There never will be a Palestine. There is no such thing as a Palestinian people. There's no culture, ethnicity, kingdom, tribe, organization, anything that has anything to do with a Palestinian. If you have to lie to justify your claims, you don't have any claims. And the origin of that godforsaken name is found only in Yahweh's writings and prophets. It describes savages who came from Crete, invaded the Promised Land, and acted like the same kind of monsters that we see among Muslims. They harassed God's people just as Muslims are today. The one that had their number and did them in was Daud, just as he will do all of them in upon his return. The Philistines that Daud, David, did not annihilate for their abuse of his people, when the Assyrians came a-calling, they did. And what trace amounts of them were left, the Babylonians took care of. And there may have been a score or so of Philistines left when Alexander the Not-So-Great waltzed through the area and was interrupted by them after having, he was an egomaniac at Tyre and on the way down to playing the ultimate egomaniac in Egypt. And he realized what every culture has realized about the Philistines is that they couldn't even be enslaved. They were too savage, too ruthless to turn into slaves. He simply eliminated the last of them. There were no Philistines by the time of the Romans, 2,200 years ago. They left nothing but bones. They didn't have their own language. They had no written language at all. They're unknown outside of the Torah. They had no currency. Nothing. They were just ruthless savages. And this name only exists because Hadrian, one of the great scumbags of human history, decided that he wanted to rename the province of Yehuda. And so he decided to name it after the long extinct enemy of the Jewish people. I said, and I have said this now for 20 years, so this is nothing new, but when 10-7 occurred, I had an open letter to the Jewish people, to Israel, and one of the points that I made is that if you do not make saying Palestine and Palestinian illegal, then you have no chance of prevailing. None. You can do whatever you want to in Gaza. You can hunt down Sinwar. You can go kill a bunch of Hamas terrorists. You got zero chance. The world will continue to believe that you're occupying Palestine and that you are annihilating Palestinian women and children. You have to know when it's essential to tell the truth. And Israel didn't have a single elected politician who could do it. Every time someone mentions Palestine or Palestinian people, everyone in Israel, every Jew in the world, ought to say, I don't know who you're talking about, nor do you. There are no such people. There is no such ethnicity. There is no such place. And so why do you have to lie? Why do you have to steal somebody else's identity? Just as the Quran tried to steal the Jewish identity by constantly plagiarizing and bastardizing the Torah. If you're so damn good, why can't you stand on your own two feet? But for the United Nations to vote 143-9, to establish
appalling
a fiefdom for terrorists, for the PLO, for Fatah, for Hamas, it's reprehensible. It makes you wish that you were not part of the human race. It's obvious why Yahweh says the first condition of the covenant is to walk away from the family of man. Humankind is revolting. And today, it is so hideously lost, not only with nearly 2 billion Muslims, whose Quran is the most disgusting, the deadliest, the most demented and demonic, the most dehumanizing text ever written, but also with progressives fanning the flames of hatred, not bright enough, not informed enough, not rational enough to know that those that they are supporting are opposed to everything they stand for. Now, we made a point years ago that extreme liberals, socialist secular humanists, as they were called at the time, promoting political correctness, now they're progressives, were exceedingly dangerous because of their influence in academia, which you're now seeing with the protests, we'll call them riots around the world, and their influence in the media. But at the time, they were not in lockstep with Islam, which they are now. You know, whether it be Black Lives Matter or it be Antifa, doesn't matter. Universal among progressives, they've decided that their enemy is going to be Israel and their ally are going to be Islamic jihadists. One of the most damning things that's ever happened in our world. And this alliance has turned Europe and much of the United States, parts of South America, to the point where the United Nations would vote 143-9 to establish hell on earth. Nicely done. I want to draw your attention to 3 things. One is that I have now finished Goddamn Religion, Volume 4. The series is currently 3,300 pages. It will be 4,000 pages when Goddamn Religion 5 is done, but 5 is a summation of events, a textual organization of the material, and a longer version of Islam's Dark Past, which is a scholastic analysis of the textual history of the Quran and Hadith. So my analysis of the Quran, which I covered every surah, some 90% of them in their entirety, is complete at 3,300 pages. I will be receiving the edit team's review of the last 2 chapters sometime, hopefully this weekend, and it'll be posted by Monday or Tuesday on yadayah.com, and then off to Amazon for publication. It is. It took me exactly 7 months to the day, May 7th, when I finished writing the book. So now it's just the editing process. I'm very pleased by that. I was also pleased that our brother, one of the most important contributors to the Covenant family, David, who manages our website, took an idea that I had and made it much better than what I had perceived. It's now up and live on yadayah.com, which is that the bookshelf itself now is interactive. It's not just the books on the shelf, but the bookshelf itself. And the reason this was so important is because the most essential work for Yisrael to read today, for Jews to read, is Goddamn Religion. You need to know your enemy. You need to know why the world has turned against you. You need to know what they're going to do next. You need to know that the problem is not Hamas. The problem is not Hezbollah. You've been lied to. The problem is not Fatah. It's not the PLO. The problem is not Iran. It's not Saudi Arabia. It's not Egypt. It's Islam. Pure and simple. Islam. The Islam of the Quran, the Islam of Muhammad, the Islam of Allah. you need to read Goddamn Religion, Israel, if you're going to survive. And so Goddamn Religion sits on the far right side of the shelf. The books on the left shelf, Introduction to God. The Adiyawa series, Observations, Coming Home. On the right side of the shelf, as we go to the far right, we have the Babel series, which is expose on all that is wrong with Judaism as witnessed through the books of Babylon, particularly Daniel and Ezekiel. And one day I will also write to expose and condemn Jonah, which was a trip to Babylon, and also Esther, which is a complete farce. Perhaps even Job, which likely takes place in that neck of the woods. And then to the right of that is a series, four volumes, currently called Questioning Paul. They're being renamed as we speak. That's my next edit task, as a Twistianity. And then to the right of those is Goddamn Religion. Currently, three volumes will be four by next week. So what David did with the website at yadaya.com is on the bookshelf, you can go to any one of the series. Like Islamic terrorism, you highlight it with your cursor, it takes you directly to the books of Goddamn Religion. If you want to know why Christianity is wrong, and this is important for Jews to understand why Christianity is wrong. Your rabbis have lied to you. It is wrong, but not for the reasons that you think. And because Christians have framed the world in which Jews have been abused, it is essential for you to understand how they put you into this place and how your rabbis did you such a disservice. And so it is very important for Jews to read Twistianity. But you can now click right on the bookshelf itself. It'll take you right to that series.
Mm-hmm. I'm doing it.
It's beautifully done. I'm just so pleased that David has been
able to
make this site work for us in this way. And there's so much to it. The index is so useful. The search is one of the, in fact, is the easiest, the best I've ever seen on any site, and this site, of course, now is 33 books and counting, so there's a lot to search. And then the resources are wonderful.
Wow.
The other item of news, the third item of news, is that prior to this program, Dee and I have been talking, and Dee has got this idea that she is convinced that the big harvest for the covenant family is Shavuot, and it could happen sooner than we anticipated. And so I'm going to be spending some time going through with Dee what she thinks, but she's compiled a 100 pages of support for your conclusion.
And it's been
that,
reviewed by a dozen covenant family members, too.
Okay.
We don't want to waste your time.
Okay, and that you are convinced that the next harvest is actually Shavuot, and it could happen sooner than we had anticipated, but that the fulfillment of Teruah will then be as Yada and Eliah returned in that final call for God's people to come home.
Yeah, if you read Daniel 12, Yeshaya 17 and Yeshaya 57, you'll see that there is an order of harvest. Two harvests are mentioned in your lifetime, Yada, by Dod to Daniel. And when we look at the Shavuot menu, the bull, who I am thoroughly convinced it represents you, is how we approach Yahweh on Shavuot. The lamb was required on Bikurim, you know, and the bull was not, because the bull wasn't necessary at that point for Dod to approach. But on Shavuot, the lamb and bull, and the go-to, I suspect, is Eliah, the final two witnesses who sign as witnesses on the Yom Kippur document, they all facilitate a harvest with Dod. So it's a very interesting study.
Okay. Well, I hope we have more time. There's so much more to translate, to learn, to write, to complete, to have prepared.
Yes.
My hope has been, and as I read Yeshaya 17 and 18, and then many of these opening psalms, my hope has been that there will be 7,000 covenant members that will make the next harvest, which I have viewed as Teruah. I recognize that Shavua is also a harvest. There are three harvests, and Bukurim, Shavua, and Teruah are harvests. But you know, so is in a real sense, so is Kippurim. It's the final family reunion. But there's so much to accomplish.
There's a great deal.
On behalf of
God's
people.
There's a great deal we have to do.
Yeah. I've never been worried about the 70,000 that I expect to be part of Yom Kippurim in year 6,000, Yah, 2033, for two reasons. One is, three reasons. One is that when I return, I am returning to be the sidekick of one of the great orators of all time, Elia.
Yeah.
And so I think Elia is going to be exceedingly effective getting the attention
Absolutely.
Of Yehudim. I may be there just to deflect Muslims and Christians and progressives away so that he can focus on Yehudim, and that would be just fine. But
it looks like you're the guy with all the words, and Elia is actually telling Israel that you are the consequence of their going astray, that they must accept this work being done with a goy, this bull who has no concern for their traditions. He is not a shoulder for Israel to cry upon in pity.
Yes.
It is a recompense for being wrong, and Elia is a supporting role because I don't think they would accept you without his without him vouching for you.
Well, that would certainly be third from Yahweh being first and Dod being second. An endorsement from Elia would certainly add a lot of credibility. I was going to say the second reason
for sure.
that I'm bullish, if you will, on the idea of 70,000 joining us for the great family reunion is that it's a return trip. And so, I had the opportunity this week to do something I have never done before. I listened to significant portions of these last few shows because Dee, you, and my wife, Leah, created talkies. So you figured out a way to take these videos that you have done and overlay them with this program. And they're riveting. As I said, I am really uncomfortable listening to my own voice. So I never have listened to a show archive. We've done, 10,000 shows. Never listened to one. I was riveted. The cadence of them, the tone, the material, and the way that they are presented, both with the graphic images that you have and the pictures that Leah has presented, it takes this message to a point where if I were Yisrael, I would listen.
Right.
It's captivating. It's so captivating that it's what I found is that I couldn't turn away. I couldn't stop listening.
Me either.
and for somebody that can't even stand to listen to his own voice, this is pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
So it was just an amazing experience. And I know both Dee, you and Leah, after having done them, have played them over and over and over again. They're
dozens.
Yeah, captivating. Yeah. And so this takes it up a notch. But can you imagine, as bullish as you like that term, that I am now.
Yeah.
After spending 6 months or so, and maybe longer, with Yah, with Dod, with my buddy Yashaya, with the man that I'm probably going to be a little shy around because I just have so much respect for his character, Moshe. After spending time in their presence, can you imagine how much forceful, how much more inspiring
yeah.
a message is going to be? How much more powerful,
yeah.
convicting? And I also recognize that Yahweh was putting on a show at the time. There will mm-hmm. be banners that fly
yeah.
and Moloch that raised the Ark of the Covenant, and they're going to be Yahweh's going to put on quite a show. And this
yes.
is going to be so intensely painful for Muslims and progressives in particular to watch. They're going to do everything they can to thwart us. And the Moloch are going to have a major say in it and are going to prevent them. And so it's going to be the must-see TV. So with that much attention and that much power and inspiration behind the words and sitting there beside Elia with Yahweh putting on a show.
Yes.
I'm
yes,
here to tell
absolutely.
You that I have zero concern. The other thing that struck me is that after translating Ezekiel and learning that Ezekiel is Satan's playbook, it's Satan fantasizing about how he envisions the world, paving over all of Yehudah with his grandiose temple to himself, and then bringing in the Feast of the Beast, which is a cannibalistic festival where blood, people are eaten. It happens to be people that I care about that are on the menu, and their blood is to be consumed. As you read that, and then you read Allah's fixation with what he calls the day of judgment, the day of doom, the last day. And he realized it's the same event, same voice, same
mm-hmm.
same demonic character. And Satan is absolutely fixated on killing and then torturing every kafar, which is thought to mean unbeliever, disbeliever, or infidel. It doesn't mean that at all. It means reconciled. It's the from the mercy seat, which is the Kippurath, and the Day of Reconciliations, Yom Kippurim. Because he recognizes if, and it's not an if, when we assemble the crowd that Yahweh and Dodo are respecting for their return on Kippurim, he's done. It's over. That's his last day. And so you see how fixated he is throughout the Quran and the book of Ezekiel on this day and trying to reshape it into his destiny. And you realize he ain't doing that unless he knows it's a loser.
Mm-hmm.
And it is for him. So the combination of these things has me very bullish on we're going to prevail in that regard. I'd just like this next harvest of covenant family members to be larger than I have been capable of inspiring. That's not for a lack of trying or the team trying. It's now over 30 books on the shelf. We've done our part.
Yeah, I was not into numbers.
Well, I know he's not, but I feel responsible.
Yeah,
and,
well, he sounds pleased with what
I know.
Doing.
He would like. He would like a better result than what I've been able to deliver, even with his help. So I'm hopeful for more time. But I will tell you, these most recent movies with the voiceover that you're doing, and you know, Steve Smirn also has a wonderful presentation of the shows in that way.
Yes.
It takes it up a notch. It is exceedingly powerful. And I think the completion of Goddamn Religion is exceedingly powerful.
Yeah.
So I'm encouraged in this regard.
Good.
So anyway, that's our introduction to this program. We're going to return to the fifth Mizmor. Unless you all have another announcement that you'd like to make, we'll jump into verse 5 of Mizmor, Psalm 5:5. It reads, "The arrogant who seek praise, the foolish and flashy, the confused and deluded, cannot be present, appear, or stand before your sight. Your is a capitalized your. Dode is speaking to his father, to Yahweh. He says to Yahweh, you hate and are hostile to all those who are engaged in, practice, or advance immoral and unjust religious deceit. They win. Now, this is the man who is king of Israel. This is the man who will return as the King of Kings. This is the ultimate Messiah. This is the one man that God said, he is my son, I am his father. He said of Dode, he is my firstborn. His name means beloved. He is the chosen one. He is the shepherd. He was the most prolific of all prophets. That's a heck of a resume. So when it comes to a man having a right to be arrogant, to be, well, I don't even know, if you have all that much going for you, is it even possible to be arrogant?
No,
he's just sure.
It's just certain, sure, passionate. So when a man like that says, God, you can't be around, you don't even want in your sight those who seek praise, the foolish, the flashy, those engaged in the practice of religious deceit, that's saying something. Again, it's why the first condition, the prerequisite of the covenant, is to walk away from the family of man, to walk away from the two most influential things humans have ever conceived, religion and government, and the integration of those two things. They are the ultimate plague on humanity. And to be part of Yahweh's family, you must walk away from them. There are a number of Hebrew words like Rah and the variations of Rah, and also Awon, that are pervasive. And by being pervasive, when they're used in the Psalms or in the prophets, they speak of a widespread cultural phenomenon that is only manifest through politics or religion. And most of the time, the setting indicates that the bigger problem is religion. And so Awon speaks of people being immoral and unjust because of religious deceit. And it has God opposed to them, hating, despising, hostile to, Sane, all who are engaged in practice in advance, Palal, who work at, perform, carry out, fashion, fabricate, or conspire to promote immoral and unjust religious deceit. They won't. That which is twisted and perverted, encouraging worship, and that which is false and thus damaging to the relationship. That is the antithesis of what Judaism preaches. It's the antithesis of what Christianity preaches. It's the antithesis of what Muslims read in their Quran. That the thing that God hates and is hostile to is everyone. All means all. That's all means. It comes from the Hebrew kol. Every single one of those who pa'al, or engage in, practice, or advance, work at, perform, carry out, fashion, fabricate, or conspire to promote immoral and unjust religious deceit. That is the antithesis of what the world expects. They expect that you reach God by being religious, and God's saying exactly the opposite. I hate the religious. Dovetails perfectly with two things that are essential for us to know. One is that the prerequisite for the covenant has us walk away and disassociate from Babel. Babel is the intermixing and commingling of religion and politics to deceive, to confound, to mislead. Until we accept that precondition, we can't even address God. We can't come to know him. We're not welcome within the covenant. You have to walk away from religion. You look at Abraham, the first to enjoy What did he do? He walked away from Babel. You look at Moshe, the person that God used more powerfully than anyone else, the man that through whom he liberated his people, the man through whom he delivered his Torah guidance. What did he leave?
Mitzrayim,
Egypt. Walked away. Where did Yahweh find Dod? Was he in the inner circle of Israel hanging around the king?
Not
tending sheep. He wasn't even hanging around his own family. He had left his own dad. We don't even know who his mom was. He was out in Bethlehem tending sheep. God said, he's my guy. So this is essential to know that until you walk away from what God finds disgusting, hateful, you can't be part of the covenant family. I began the first volume of Observations, which I come to appreciate more and more every day, because Observations began with the Mashal, the Proverbs, initially assailing Christianity, which has had such an effect on God's people. And then we try to figure out who was this whore of Babylon that Dod was writing about in the Mashal. And we knew that that's where Yeshaya, the ultimate prophet in terms of the breadth of time that he spoke of, brought up and associated Hillel ben Shakar, Satan, with Babel. And so then we all of Yeshaya up to that point and Observations to understand this connection between religion and Babel, this commingling and commixing to confound and to confuse. And so what we found is that the number one theme of Yeshaya, Isaiah, is God hates religion. Hates it. So the whole purpose of the Mikra are to scrub our souls of religion so that once we have walked away, we can appear perfect in God's family. So we began Observations by stating what Dod, speaking for Yahweh, has once again affirmed. It would be a vastly better world if more of us knew what to hate and how to properly express our righteous indignation.
Mm-hmm.
And it shouldn't be all that difficult, since Yahweh has established the example that we should follow. How did he express his hate? With words.
Words, yes.
That's what we should be doing. Rather than Israel bombing and shooting Hamas, they would have been so much more effective if they had expressed words and boldly and in an uncompromising fashion with knowledge, evidence, and reason gone after Islam and explained why Islam is incompatible with the world and why they must rid Israel of Islam, starting by raising the Dome of the Rock and Al-Aqsa Mosque.
You're here.
Mm-hmm.
If given the opportunity, I tell you for certain I will destroy them.
Oh, yeah.
And if Yah says, no, I'm going to give that honor to Dod, then, you know, that's okay. I'll put a big screen up so I don't have to ever look at them. But those scars on the Temple Mount have to be removed.
Yep.
And so we need to know what to hate, how to hate, because if you don't know how to hate and what to hate, you can't love. If Israel wanted to prevent the next 10-7, which is going to happen, and it's going to be 100-fold worse, the only way to do that is to expose and condemn Islam so that Islam is incapable of doing it. Otherwise, they will league together and they will attack Israel. and it will be 100-fold what was experienced on 10-7. So the only way that you can protect your women and children, even men, from being raped and abducted, murdered, burned alive, is to wield words wisely. We need to learn how to hate the rapist, how to hate the pedophile, mm-hmm. how to hate the mass murderer, how to hate the religious liar who inspires terrorism. Otherwise, you're not showing any love for the innocent that they would otherwise kill. Every religion and leaders, from the chief rabbi of every ilk and cult of Judaism, I should say, and every grand potentate of each Christian denomination from the Pope on down, is condemned by this particular declaration. They will never stand before Yahweh. He abhors them. That's why mm-hmm. Yahweh could not communicate through a rabbi and instead found a bull. There were no members of his flock who would even listen to him mm-hmm. or that he could even stand to be around. That's changing, but it's changing slowly. Religion is a cancer, and it is spread by those who practice and advance its twisted and perverted idolatry. Yahweh is not amused. You either destroy or expel those who speak religious lies, especially the delusions promoting false gods, kazab, that which is contrary to reality, deceptions regarding pagan deities, that which is unreliable will fail and thus disappoint. Bloodthirsty individuals, as well as the deliberately misleading and deceitful mira, the deceptive and dishonest, those who hold a false perception of reality, especially those who use guile and subtlety, pretending to be truthful, rama, to question the rama, those who cast aspersions by beguiling and deceiving. Regarding Yahweh, he sees as repulsive and rejects. God hates religion. Why the volumes that have wrote against Islam are named Goddamn Religion. God hates religion. He separates himself from religion. He damns the religious. Mm-hmm. The thing that irritates God more than anything else is religion. Why? They all change his name. They all misrepresent him.
Mm-hmm.
They all cover over and contradict what he actually said. They all direct attention away from his testimony, and they create a false god plastered over the real one. The worst part of it is Yahweh's plan revolves around his son, Dote. He's the Messiah. He's the Passover lamb. He's the one who fulfilled matzah. He's the returning king. To create a religion like Christianity, which took a mythical Christ and afforded him all of the accolades and titles of Dote, is the single most annoying thing that can be done to God.
Yeah.
And Judaism did the same thing, but with Bar Kokhba, son of a star, which is why Israel parades around under a star even today. It was the birth of Judaism under Akiba with the false Messiah, Bar Kokhba. And they created this false Messiah because they realized the real one was supposed to come in your 4,000 Yah. Happened to be 33 CE. And because they denied Dode and didn't recognize Dode, Christianity emerged and Judaism was looking for a way to counter it, so it came up with a false Messiah of their own. This is why God hates religion. We talked in our last program, of maybe the last two programs, of how the single great discovery in the last 3,000 years is the recognition that Dode David, the Messiah, the King of Israel, the Shepherd, is the Zeruah. He is the Passover lamb. And that he volunteered for this duty, and that he explained exactly why he was going to do it, and that Yahweh supported his decision throughout the initial Mizmor, speaking in first person about the agony that he would endure by fulfilling particularly Pesach and Matzah, leading to Bukurim in the 22nd and 88th Psalms, writing them in first person. Was there for the whole world to see. It's been there for the whole world to see for 3,000 years, and yet no one has picked up on it. Single most important discovery in human history, because it shapes our relationship with God and our ability to return to him, particularly for God's people. You should not be looking for an unnamed Messiah. He's been here twice already, and he will return. He has a name. It's Dod.
Right.
You should understand what the Mikre represent and how God enabled the benefits of the covenant through them. So please, these are essential things for you to understand, and how God, as Father and Son, enabled them. So you either destroy or expel. By the way, destroy and expel, there's a reason for Abad being written this way. There are two fates for human souls. Well, three total, but in this particular case, with those associated with religion, there's two. Those who are beguiled by religion but don't do anything that is detrimental to God's people by their religion, their soul simply ceases to exist upon their death. They don't go to heaven. They don't go to hell. All that is known about them is whatever memory is kept alive, and those who knew them. But there's no penalty and no reward. And that's the overall preponderance of human souls. For those who have been religious, like popes and rabbis, and have deceived God's people, made a shekel by deceiving God's people, who have abused God's people, Sheol exists for them, and that's a place of eternal separation. And so the reason that this has to be written this way is the being expelled is different than being destroyed. A soul that is destroyed, well, that's the best that a person who is apart from the covenant can expect, can hope for.
Absolutely.
But if you're expelled, you're going to Sheol.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really bad outcome, because that's eternal separation from God. So that's the reason it's written this way. And those who speak religious lies, especially the delusions promoting false gods. Hashem is a false god. Adonai, a false god. Allah, a false god. Jesus Christ, a false god. Mother Earth and this devotion to this global community is a false god. And, of course, religions promote death. None as much as Islam, but they're all deadly and bloody. Islam, of course, revolves around death. Slaughter is essential to Allah. His goal is, with humankind, to either subjugate humans so that they become his slaves and worship Satan as God, or kills them, annihilates them. It's slaughtering all mankind is the essential edict of Islam. Islam, the Islamic era actually begins with the Pledge of Aqaba, which is a declaration to wage war against all mankind, and it is repeated throughout the Quran, that if to be a Muslim, you must be committed to die killing humankind. So bloodthirsty individuals, indeed, are the deliberately misleading and deceitful, and Yahweh sees them as repulsive.
Mm-hmm.
So Abad is bad. It is to be Abad by God is either to have one soul exterminated or expelled from his presence, and the latter is a whole lot worse than the former because it leads to incarceration in Sheol.
Mm-hmm.
Religions are mirah, beguiling, which is why Yahweh Ta'ab rejects them as repulsive. It's ironic that the institutions claiming to speak for God are the ones that he finds the most abhorrent. Long ago, when translating the majestic 119th Psalm, it's the one where there are 22 refrains for the 22 letters in the Hebrew language presented in alphabetical order with 8 statements per letter. Dode's soaring ode to the Torah, we heard Yah's son tell us that Yahweh himself couldn't keep him out of heaven because he was carrying a copy of the Torah with him. It's the same claim that we all make. Yahweh has no option in this regard now. He has said, if you capitalize on what I'm offering in my Torah, you walk away from religion, you accept the terms and conditions of the covenant, you meet with me on during these invitations to be called out, then my commitment to you is that you're part of my family, that you're perfected, and that we will spend eternity together. My job is to enrich you, empower you, to enlighten you, to emancipate you. So we've recognized that for a long time, that
right.
Those who capitalize on the Torah, rather than being condemned by it, which is the malarkey of Paul, are liberated by it. The Torah is what makes the imperfect perfect, and it does so on matzah because Dode carried our imperfections with him into Sheol and left them there, never to be seen again. So we now know why Dode was saying, God, even you can't keep me out of heaven. You made this promise. I'm coming with the Torah. That's the answer. It's the right answer. So he writes, but as for me, through the abundance of your devotion and steadfast love, Chesed, I will come, arriving upon and entering your family and home. I have chosen on my own initiative to make an informative announcement explaining this verbally, showing and making this known regarding your set-apart palatial residence with reverence and respect to you. Mizmor Psalm 5:7. I have the same confidence that Dode has in this regard, and I think we all do as part of the covenant family, is that we know for certain that Yahweh is devoted to his family. The covenant is the only reason the universe exists.
Right.
It is the heart of the Torah. The Torah is central to God's message to humankind. It's his teaching and guidance, and the heart of the Torah is the covenant. God wants a family. He wants to enjoy the role of being father. And the covenant is the means to that. The mikre exists to enable the benefits of the covenant. And Dode is the exemplar. The reason Yahweh referred to him is, he is my son, I am his father, is because Dode exemplifies the covenant, God's purpose. It is also because Dode served as the Pesach El, and that's how God told us he was going to fulfill Pesach. That's the whole story of Abraham and Yishak on Mount Moriah, exactly 40 Yobel, 2,000 years before father and son, Yahweh and Dode, fulfilled it, exactly that same place, exactly at the same day.
Mm-hmm.
So Dode is coming to Yahweh's home. This is also important because I think one of the most powerful prophecies ever spoken was conveyed to us from Samuel. Listen to him, 2 Samuel 7. Nathan was the prophet through whom Yahweh spoke. He spoke to his son, Dode. And at the time, Dod was saying, I really want to build a home for Yahweh. I'm sitting here in this gorgeous home here in Yisrael made of cedar, and Yahweh's hanging out in a tent. So I want to build a home for Yahweh. And, you know, Nathan said, you know, whatever you want, king, you're king, you know, do what you want. And that night, Yahweh spoke to Nathan and said, would you tell that son of mine that, you know, I've been hanging out here in a tent ever since I went with Moshe to the children of Israel to liberate the children of Israel from slavery and Mitzrayim. And at any time did I ever say to the children of Israel, who I rescued, would you build me a house of cedar? Ever? Since I brought you to the promised land, have I ever once told anybody I want you to build me a house? So why are you fussing over a house? When I have a house and it's built in Yisrael on Mount Moriah, it's not even my house. It's your house. It's the house of the covenant family. And so Yahweh said, you know, it's my job as your father to build the house for you. And that's what I'm going to do. And so even as Dod's son, Solomon, took the threshing floor that Dod had purchased on the summit of Mount Moriah to build the house that he built, the house of the covenant, Yahweh's covenant, Yahweh's family. It's our home. And so when Dod is speaking about the family home, boy, I tell you what, he knows of what he spoke, because when he was talking about building one for Yahweh, Yahweh said, hey, kid, what is this talk that you're going to build me a house? You know, I appreciate you all, but we have a relationship, and in this relationship where you're my son, I just happen to be God. So trust me on this one. I can do this better than you can. But I appreciate the thought nonetheless.
Yeah.
So Dod says, okay, I get it. It's a good deal. In fact, you notice when I said that this opportunity to call Yisrael home during these last 3.5 years before Dod's return, I said that given the opportunity, I will destroy the Dome of the Rock and Alaska Mosque. I will be gone. I did not say that I will build the covenant family home, Yahweh's house again. That's not my job.
Right.
That's Yahweh's job. And if Yahweh wants to engage us in it, which I think he does, then he will. Then we'll build it together. But it's not going to be built of stone. It'll be built of light.
Right.
It's going to be an extraordinary sight. But all I want to do is get rid of the eyesore so that I can envision what's going to be there. So Dod said, I've made this choice of my own initiative to make an important announcement, explaining this verbally, showing and making this known regarding your palatial residence, reverence and respect to you. Dod knew a thing or two about being part of God's family, and we can learn a great deal from him. So to be fair, Dod is in a unique position here. He actually punched his own ticket to Shamayim. We're all riding on his ticket. He fulfilled Chag Matzah. Yep, he opened the door at Pesach. He fulfilled Chag Matzah. And the way he did that is that Dod, two components of Dod, actually, we should say there's more to it than that, but the principal aspects of Dod at the time of fulfilling Pesach and Matzah was a corporeal body, a bashar. That's why the Hebrew word for physical body and the Hebrew word for herald of communicating an uplifting and beneficial message, both bashar. As a verb, it means to communicate an uplifting and beneficial message. As a noun, it's a body. Same word. Because that's the announcement that he made. By offering his physical corporeal body, which had no value to anybody except it was able to be used to fulfill Pesach, his soul then took our guilt. Nefesh, his soul, took our guilt to Sheol and deposited there. This is the announcement that he's making. It is what we get to capitalize upon to enter Shamayim as well. So Dode punched his own tickets. We're riding on his train and happy to do so. This is why he did it. He has to be. He knows his role. He's the leader and shepherd of the covenant family for all time throughout the universe. It's a big job. And He did the one thing that would cause every one of us there to be eternally grateful, because we're only there because of what he did. Had he not done this, we wouldn't be there. So I can't imagine somebody grumbling and saying, why couldn't somebody else be king or messiah or leader? Why you? Because none of us would even be there had he not done this. And, oh, by the way, we're there because God made it possible, and God chose this man. So if you don't like God's choice, you probably wouldn't want to be there at all.
Pretty much.
Dode is God's choice. If you think that we're fussing over him, if you think that we're making a big deal of him, if you think that, that I've got a bromance with this man, nothing compared to God.
Oh, yeah. Yahweh follows him around.
Yeah, Yahweh loves Dode. And It behooves us to examine all of the reasons that he does. But I'm going to tell you, foremost of those reasons is for Dode to be smart enough to figure it out. Somewhere along the way, when he was writing the 119th Mizmor about the Torah, and he recognized that the focus of the Torah was the covenant, and that the covenant was enabled through the Mikra, and that the story of how those two intersected is told as Abraham and Yitzhak go to Mount Moriah and do the dress rehearsal for Pesach, where God says, don't take the life of your son, your only son, the son that you love, because he's going to provide the lamb. I'm sure it just was riveting for Dode. And so, wait a minute. There's a reason you've called me your son. This is for me to do. And what an opportunity, because while it's two hellacious days, forevermore, I'm remembered as the one who did this for the covenant family. And so Yahweh gave Dode the greatest opportunity in the world, and Dode gave Yahweh the greatest gift in the world, the gift that enabled the covenant family.
Yeah.
So this is really an extraordinary pronouncement. Upon his arrival, he will enter Yahweh's home. Now this is when Dode comes back to anoint the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. And there's a whole story told about Aaron acting up and being bad and therefore really being disqualified. And the only way that Aaron could even function as the high priest and perform the duties that were required of him was to come clean, because, Aaron was religious. That golden calf was partly Aaron's idea. He participated.
Mm-hmm.
So there had to be a way to reconcile the relationship. The way to do it is the anointing of the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant, Yahweh knows exactly where it is. I think it's in Yirmiyah's grotto directly under where Dode hung on the crucifixion stake of the Romans fulfilling Pesach. I think that is exactly where it is, and I think that the Malach are going to bring it up, and we're going to have a chance to see it during the last years, but that to fulfill reconciliation, to honor the Torah promises, to make it possible for the family reunion, Dode is going to anoint that mercy seat, the Kapporeth. Yeah. You know, we call it the mercy seat. It's a Kapporeth. It is the reconciliation seat. It's the same word, kafar.
Right.
Covered.
That's the same verb that is the basis of Yom Kippur. So this would suggest that it's some portion or all of Yahweh's eternal residence will be manifest upon his return. And personally, I'm hoping that it is comprised of lights. It is pleasing to the eye and perfect for spiritual beings. Dode is giving notice that he has and will return, and that he is affirming that the lyrics to these songs will be sung. Nothing else matters, not really. Yes, we have our families and we have our jobs and our hobbies and our interests, even the need to attend to the laborious affairs of life, from sleeping to eating, but all of that is like a flower blowing in the wind compared to sharing what Dode and Yahweh have done together to enable us to spend eternity as part of God's covenant family. There's so much to learn about God, about heaven, about the Torah, and about Dode and Yahweh's relationship, about the covenant family, about what it means to be set apart, about the role the Mikre play, what Sion, these signs posted along the way say, why they run up the ridgeline of Moriah, what Moriah even means to respect and revere Yahweh, why it is in a place called Jerusalem, which speaks of the source of guidance on reconciliation. Yehuda, which means beloved of Yah. Yisrael, those who engage and endure with God. When we closely examine and carefully consider the covenant home, this earthly abode for the covenant family, we understand what God is trying to communicate to us, what he is offering us, and what he expects from us in return. Yeah, you want to lead me, guiding me to the most favorable outcome, then rely on me, trusting me to achieve what you know is right and vindicating, especially with regard to responding to those who, acting as if they were authority figures, are adversarial and opposed to me. You want to engage such that your way is straightforward and right before me and in my presence. Mizmor. Lyrics to be sung, Psalm 5:8. Dode's laid it all out for us. He's saying directly to God, who, by the way, he speaks to by name. This is the man that God loved more than any other. And throughout his mizmor, he always calls Yahweh, Yahweh. States his name openly, frequently, boldly, proudly, respectfully. Yahweh. If you're going to be part of his family, you must do the same. Yahweh. You want to lead me, guiding me, which is the whole concept of Torah. Here, this time it comes from the Hebrew, Nakah. Your will is to direct me so that I'm prepared to lead, with you choosing to depend upon me because you have decided to trust me. I'm telling you, this is as good as life can possibly get. Mm-hmm. I know that, and I think it's true for many members of the covenant family, that the most content we can ever be is when we settle into the realization that God trusts us.
Yeah.
That he has given us a job to do, and he trusts us. Now, he plays a big role in enabling us to do it well with, you know, his spirit supporting us and his word teaching us and his Malach keeping us safe. Sure. No, he creates an environment where his children can prosper and achieve what needs to be done. But he trusts us to do it. Yahweh knows, for example, that I'm not going to walk away from this. I'm going to continue to devote myself to it to my last breath.
Yeah.
Dod knew that. Yahweh trusted him. Now, what Dod was tasked with doing was the single most important thing that anyone has done in human history. But I'm here to tell you, what Yahweh is trusting us to do is really important. His successful return to an adoring family on Yom Kippurim is to a large extent dependent upon it. That's why he made so many pronouncements about it. That's why he's gone to such an extent to enable us to achieve it. So while it's not in the league by any stretch of the imagination of what Moshe did or Dod did or even Yahshua conveyed, it is still among the most important things in Yahweh's story, calling his people home. Israel, you have been so embittered, so hostile to God for so long, for 3,500 years. You need to change. You need to change in a hurry. And that's the message we're communicating to you. Yahweh is lovable. To know him is to respect him. He made exactly what he is offering and expecting in return evident to us. He told us what he hates, which is religion, politics. He's asking you to disassociate from these things and then come to him in the means that he has provided and that he and his son have achieved together. That's what this is all about. And you don't have a lot of time to get your act together. This is coming to a very rapid conclusion, and between now and then it's going to get hellacious for Jews. You think it's bad now, 143-9.
Yeah.
Think it's bad now following October 7th, 2023, and the whole world reacting against you and protesting against you, including your own people, as progressives joining the Muslims. You think this is bad compared to what's going to happen over these next 9 years? And the reason it has to get bad is because if it doesn't, you're going to continue to shut God out of your lives. And he knows it. Now, God isn't perpetrating these things. You've done that to yourself.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
One of my friends today said, you know, with all that happened with Hadrian, for example, and Titus and Vespasian did in Israel and with Yehudim and tearing down the covenant family home and using the proceeds and the slaves to build the Colosseum, you know, first response is, why did God allow that? It's really simple. God told Israel, if you respect me, if you listen to what I have to say and you respond to what I'm offering, then you're going to be the envy of the world. Everything you possibly want, you'll have. You'll have no concerns of any kind. But if you don't, if you act like the waters of Meribah and you're cantankerous, you won't even say my name. You create a religion as opposed to engaging in the relationship that I'm offering, thumbing your nose, spitting at me. If you do these things, then, well, the world's going to have its way with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be really miserable for you. At the end, I'll do what I promised. I will reconcile my relationship with you, but it'll only be because of some extraordinary events in the last days that this is going to be possible. That's why it happened.
Yeah.
That's why it continues to happen. So God is really clear about this and talking to Dode about it. Yahweh, I want you to lead me, guiding me to the most favorable outcome. The most favorable outcome and relying on Dode to see it through is the fulfillment of Chag-Masoch, Pesach, and Matzah. Pesach opening the doorway to life, opening the doorway to God's home. Matzah providing the welcome mat for which all of our guilt is removed, the guilt of every covenant member. Mm-hmm. Hauled off with Dode to Sheol and deposited there. We don't need saving at that point.
Right.
Saved from what? We're already perfect. We don't just appear perfect. We are perfect. Everything that we've ever done that was imperfect is gone, sent off to Sheol, never to be seen again. That's why it's a black hole. Dode did this for us. Yahweh made it possible for him to do it to us. He trusted Dode to do it. And he led Dode to the realization that this was the right thing to do. And as a result, he says, you know what is right in vindicating, tzedakah. You see, tzedakah is the verb and noun that is actually the most associated with Dode. He's anointed Mashiach, Messiah, three times.
Yeah.
Pretty important term, particularly as it relates to Dode. He's called the branch probably five times more often than that. It's the branch off the tree of life. It's pretty important. He's called the Ra'ah, which is the shepherd of God's people, of his flock, a really important concept as well. He's the Passover lamb, an exceedingly important concept. He is God's then son, his Bakur, firstborn, his chosen one. These are all very important concepts. He's the king, which is our counselor.
Mm-hmm.
But more than anything, far more than anything else, he's Tzedakah.
Yeah.
And in this case, Tzedakah, which is the feminine of Tzedakah. Why? Because Tzedakah conveys three things, really. Right, upright, vindicated. Up, right, upright, vindicated. Think about those three things. To be part of God's family, you don't have to be good. He doesn't want you to pray to him, doesn't want you to worship him. Don't have to make any donations. You got to be right.
Yep.
Dode was right. What does right mean? It means understanding what God is offering and expecting in return. That's what right means. Dode was right. How did he become right? Well, he didn't just read the Torah. He wrote the most wonderful expose on how to observe the Torah ever written, 119th Mizmor. Even the 19th Mizmor sings to the Torah. So Dode was right. Dode was upright, which means he wasn't down on his knees bowing down. He wasn't worshiping. He wasn't head bowed in prayer. He was standing up with Yahweh because Yahweh wants his sons and daughters to walk with him, not grovel at his feet. He doesn't want us lifting him up. He wants to lift us up. He wants to go explore the universe with us. He wants to do stuff with us. He wants us on our feet. And lifting us up is his prime objective. Tzedakah means upright. Three, Tzedakah means acquitted and vindicated. When we're right with God, when we're upright and engaged with God, we are vindicated, which means we are seen as perfected. We are not guilty, which means matzah applies to us, which enables us to be part of God's family. No salvation required if you are tzedakah. Dode is the ultimate in tzedakah. It's why he is the exemplar of covenant. He is the exemplar of Yisrael. That could well be the most important word of all the words in the Torah and prophets, Tzedakah and Tzedakah. There's lots of important ones. Of course, Yahweh's name is the most important. And Kara, the invitation to be called out, exceedingly important. And, of course, Bereth, covenant family, exceedingly important. Yada, to know. Bien, to understand. But it's hard to find a word that is more central to our relationship with God than tzedakah. And here Dode is saying, you know what is right, you know what is vindicating, you know what to accept as correct and acquitting. And therefore, Dode recognized that by fulfilling Chag Matzah, not only would he be vindicated, but so would the entire covenant family. And that when we're right about what Pesach and Matzah leading to Bikurim represent, and we see Dode fulfilling them with Yahweh's support, we benefit the same way he did.
Yeah.
So especially with regard to responding to those who are acting as if they're authority figures, who are adversarial and opposed to me, why would Dode go from this most glorious statement of you trust me to achieve what is right and vindicating to saying that it's in opposition to those who are acting as authority figures? Because God, it's one thing for Dode and Yahweh, father and son, to have fulfilled Pesach and Matzah, so we can capitalize upon them. But if you don't know he did it and that's available to us, then it has no benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And the most popular religion in world history, Christianity, exists expressly to remove all traces of what Dode did and give them to this mythical misnomer, ripping them completely away from the Mikre and the covenant. There's nothing that could have been done more adversarial to God's people, to the covenant family, to Yahweh, to Dode, to our eternity. Judaism, just as bad. False Messiah, doesn't acknowledge what Dode does, denies that God has a son, denies Dode as the Messiah, even denies matzah. It's just a missing ingredient or an ingredient as part of celebration of a seven-day Passover. Not the way it's meant at all. Passover is just the first day of a seven-day celebration of matzah.
Yeah. It's no good burning chametz, no good burning yeast if you haven't eaten the lamb, so you're just destroyed because you're infested with yeast. And they do these yeast burning ceremonies, but they don't approach with the lamb. It's totally nonsensical, and it's really a metaphor of what's going to happen to them.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And so that's why Dode is so upset. And look at Muslims, and, 143-9. The world voting in favor of those who rape, plunder, abduct, and murder Jews.
Yeah.
And the Jew of Jews is Dode. Dode is literally Israel. Yes, I know that Jacob was renamed Israel, and he's called Israel. Dode is Israel.
Yeah.
Literally embodies the good and the bad of Israel. And there is no greater enemy today of Israel than Islam. And in Islam, Dode is a central figure. Dawood is what he is called. And he's turned into a Muslim. And so what the Quran and Islam do to Dode is, it's deserving of hell, which is where Allah will be sent and Muhammad, and all of those who have aided and abetted the advance of Islam against God's people. You want to engage such that your way is straightforward before me and in my presence. The way to Yahweh is the seven steps of the Moed Mikre. Always been that way. Pesach is the doorway to God's home and to life. Matzah is the entire process of perfecting us so that we're prepared to enter God's home. Bikurim is when we're born into God's family. Shavuah, we're enriched, we're empowered. Teruah, we become heralds, speaking of what Father and Son have done. Kippurim, where the ultimate family reunion occurs. And Sukkah, where we camp out together on a restored earth, where it's returned to the conditions experienced in the Gan Eden 6,000 years ago. This is the path to God. It is the straightforward and right way that Yahweh expects his people to follow. It is what he is offering. It is what he expects from us in return. It's what one must know if you're going to be part of the covenant family. And Dod is the central actor in this process. He either fulfilled, will fulfill, or he is the subject of the fulfillment. And we do it all, and he did it all, in God's presence. So I dare say this may be among the most important yet underappreciated prophecies that we've encountered. It is bold, it is unexpected, and affirming, all at the same time. But if I may ask now that we have searched Yahweh's word together over the course of many years without reading ahead, in this, do you see what I saw? I ask this because the answer is relevant to how we proceed. After all, when this was initially posted, it was the 19th book over the course of nearly that many years. And when it was reposted, it was the 27th in this series. So there have been 10,000 radio broadcasts during that time. We have investigated and shared countless profound insights together, many of which were unheralded by anyone through the past 3,000 years. At issue here, on the one hand, is that, you know, I don't want everyone to miss out on something that Yahweh has to share that's particularly important. The more we know, the more we understand, the better our relationship with him becomes. But on the other hand, I don't want you to miss the sense of adventure, the satisfaction, personal growth that comes from discovery. You know, I don't want to wear our listeners and readers down with too much commentary. You know, up to this point, I've tried to share as much as I thought was prudent, providing everyone with more accurate and amplified translations, and then adding additional insights on words and their usage that is helpful to go from yada knowing to bien understanding. And at times like this, I'm drawn to convey how a statement fits within the bigger picture that Yahweh was painting, because that's how we come to understand. Now, we are about to end our broadcast portion of this program. We'll stay with this a while longer because we're mid-thought here. And for the next 30 minutes, we will continue to record. And I've noticed that there's been a significant spike in the listenership to this program. So we are beginning to strike a nerve with God's people. So perhaps the answer to my question is right before us. If you see what I'm seeing, by reading to you and by you hearing what follows, by way of affirmation, we will have something to share that we both enjoy. And if not, then by walking you through the process, providing a light and a lens and maybe the proper orientation, with time, you'll be out gallivanting through his words on your own initiative. To begin, there are many interesting and pertinent shades to Nakah, all of which color Dode's lyrics, some of which rise to the level of chutzpah. Chutzpah is Yiddish for supreme confidence, that it is audacious even for him. With the primary definition of Nakah in this context, the statement would read, "Lead me because you want to guide me." This rendering, at least apart from the imperative, making it Yah's decision, and would well be within the normal bounds of what we would expect from everyone who is associated with Yahweh, who is Torah observant, to think and say. Further, since Dode expressed his personal inclination in the previous statement, it makes perfect sense to affirm that it is also God's desire to lead and guide those who are committed to proclaiming what they have learned about his home. And boy, did Dode know a lot about Yahweh's home.
The most.
Yes. And I'm not sure it's the most, because he was wrong in wanting to build Yahweh's home. And I can understand why the son would want to do that for his father. But Yahweh said, "Come on, kid. No. No, this is not the way this is going to go down."
Oh, yeah.
And here's why. Yeah. But by the way, me telling you no is the ultimate yes in all of human history. I'm telling you no in such a way that is the biggest yes that anyone has ever heard previously.
That's so true. So,
yes. Don't be disappointed by me telling you no, because it's far better for you. But where this becomes a bit audacious is with regard to Nakash's secondary connotation, which would read, "You choose and wants to depend upon and trust me." Nakash conveys the idea that both parties in the relationship trust one another and rely upon one another. And it can be extrapolated to infer to the point that they are seen leaning on one another based upon their mutual respect, such that by working together, they both expect a favorable outcome. Synergistic and relational approach is wholly out of sync with religious perceptions of an all-knowing, all-powerful, omnipresent, and micromanaging God. Such a God does not need anyone to advance his agenda, especially the men and women who, motivated by fear, are compelled to bow down and worship him. And frankly, the religious perceptions are completely invalid. To approach his purpose, Yahweh not only wants to depend upon men and women like Dode, trusting and relying upon them, he must do so. For God to work independent of humanity would defeat his entire purpose. The only reason the universe and life exists is because God chose to work with us, to do things through us, and to have us be part of his family. Therefore, Dode is right. He is just more supremely confident than the rest of us. It is Yahweh's will to depend upon us, such that by trusting and relying upon one another, we achieve perfect harmony within the covenant relationship. Did you actually believe that God was going to sit around all day and listen to Dodd sing and not join in? Yahweh and Dodd make beautiful music together. So I'm not going to say it, but I'm glad Dodd did. We should trust one another and depend upon each other. It is the way a father and son relationship ought to be. It's pure covenant. And, you know, I came up with this analysis of this a couple of years back. And over these 2 years, you know, something has happened. And part of the growth process of being in this position is that I've become like Dodd. I see my relationship with Yahweh the same way. In fact, I've even relaxed in it. I enjoy it. I feel like my father appreciates what we're doing. I feel like he isn't the least bit worried that I'm not going to see this through and that our team, this covenant family, is going to work to get this job done because the future of his relationship with his people is depending upon us working together effectively to convey his message. So I'm right there with Dodd on this. I don't think it's the least bit egotistical. I think it is, in fact, it's respectful. Mm-hmm. It's saying, God, I get it. I understand what you're offering. I understand what you want. I understand what needs to be done. And I appreciate having this opportunity to work with you on it. Thank you for trusting us. Another fascinating aspect of Nakash is that it's considered to be synonymous with Nakag, which speaks of herding sheep, particularly away from captivity to a predetermined destination, say from Mitzrayim to Yisrael, out of Babylon and back home to Yisrael. Mm-hmm. This shepherd, therefore, had a shepherd, a kind and compassionate one, because Naka is also used interchangeably with Nakal, which is to tenderly guide someone away from trouble. Further, Naka is directly related to Nakam, more frequent of Hebrew terms, which means to comfort and console those who are receptive to changing their mind. That's a thought which will rock our world before long.
Mm-hmm.
Guiding us away from trouble, tzedakah tells the tale of vindication. It provides an acquittal, thereby declaring the defendant not guilty and thus innocent. That's even better than being not guilty, innocent.
Mm.
We can't be guilty because our guilt was taken by Dodd on Masa and taken into Sheol. So we're not guilty, we are innocent. Moreover, since lies are harmful, tzedakah corrects them, leaving us with what's right, even just, honest, appropriate, prosperous, and true. When it comes to knowing and approaching and living with God, nothing is more important than tzedakah, being right. Sometimes it's what Bible translations fail to say that is as misleading as what they actually convey.
Mm-hmm.
The religious publishers would have us believe that David was afraid and wanted his God to deliver him by leading him away from his enemies. It's not even close to what Lama'an Shower actually means. Dodd was looking for Yahweh's guidance, Laman, with regard to his testimony and response, such that he could provide a witness which answers the shower. You see, Lama'an is a compound of law concerning and ana, to answer by providing testimony. He wanted to confront the shower, wielding words, not run from those bearing arms.
Wow.
Even more revealing, the primary definition of shower isn't enemy, but instead to act as an authority, to lord over others, and to reign or govern contentiously. Therefore, Dodd was providing testimony in response to shower, those who, acting as if they were authorities, were adversarial and opposed to what he was testifying. The empowered who govern in a manner adverse to Dode's guidance, especially those who contentiously lord over others contrary to Dode's leadership, his example, his lyrics, his sacrifice. In the imperative, Dode is expressing the will of the one he is addressing. In the hifl, he is conveying two additional concepts, that God is the one causing this result, and that by doing so, Dodd is engaging in the manner of Yahweh, becoming his understudy. Further, it's Yahweh's, I should say, Derek way, which is being correctly revealed in Dodd's Pene presence. Dodd's not saying, we're going to go and do this my way. He's saying, Yahweh, you trust me to do it your way. And while these insights are extraordinary, there is far more to Dodd's pronouncement. Yahweh, you want to lead me, guiding me to the most favorable outcome, and then rely on me, trusting me to achieve what you know is right and vindicating, especially with regard to responding to those who, acting as if they were authority, are adversarial and opposed to me. You want to engage such that your way is straightforward and right in my presence. Dodd is announcing that Yahweh was convinced that he had led his son to the point that he could be relied upon to carry out the most important of all missions. The father was ready to trust his son to do what they both knew was right. As monumental as this prophecy is to our understanding, it is nuclear in its intensity, especially when set up by what precedes it. For the observant, Dodd is actually explaining the way Yahweh intends to use him.
Mm-hmm.
So what else did the Almighty convey by inspiring his son to write these words? The answer to that question is found in Yeshaya Isaiah 40. But before we turn to clock forward a few hundred years for Yeshaya's clarification, I think we should review where these first five Mizmor have taken us. And, you know, it's 10 minutes to the show being over. I don't think I can get us through this list in that 10 minutes. So I think that the best thing for us to do is to say, all right, we're going to pick this up with our program next week, because Blog Talk Radio will cut us off in exactly 9 minutes from now.
Okay.
So I have no chance to get us to where we need to be. And this is really an extraordinary watershed moment. It's one that I know that I missed for the first 20 years that I've was doing this. This is Dode acknowledging that he and his father knew what needed to be done, agreed with what needed to be done, trusted one another to get it accomplished. I mean, for Dode to come back as the Pisak El, as the Zoroa, he needed Yahweh to bring him back. And for his sacrifice to mean anything, he needed Yahweh to accept what he had done as the Pisak El and apply it to the purpose of the Moed Mikre on behalf of all who attended and accepted. And then, more important than that, he had to rely upon Yahweh collectively taking the guilt of every covenant member, placing it on his soul, taking him into Sheol, depositing it all there, and then releasing him on Bokorum. Yeah. Dode was very reliant on Yahweh. To do this, to go into Sheol, you better know that Yahweh is going to take you out. So Dode had to trust Yahweh even more than Yahweh had to trust Dode. And that it is only by working together. That is the beauty of all of this. It's why, you know, that Christianity with their dead God on a stick doesn't accomplish anything. You have to understand what Pesach represents, how it was fulfilled, why it was fulfilled, what it means.
Mm-hmm.
And so the demise of Dode's corporeal body on Pesach is nothing apart from the Torah's instructions regarding it and everything when it's put into that context. The same thing is true with matzah. Matzah doesn't mean anything until you understand what the yeast represents, which is religion, politics, the things that irritate God, the things that take us away from God, the things that separate us from God, they're removed.
Yeah.
And for those of us who have walked away from these corrupting institutions, we can rely on Dode to take our guilt for the times that we were previously religious and political and carry it off into Sheol, never to be seen again, which enables us to celebrate Bokorum with him. Bokorum means firstborn children. It's plural. Dode was just the Bokor, the first of the firstborn, leading the way for all the rest of us. And then, of course, on Shabuah, we receive the benefits of being increased tenfold, being enriched and empowered, emancipated. That's the whole thing with God. He doesn't want us to be obedient. He is instead saying, I'm emancipating you. I'm liberating you. I'm giving you free will. I'm empowering you. I'm enriching you. I'm enlightening you. I'm doing everything for your benefit. And he's saying, I'm going to do everything I can to make you ever more like me. I'm going to increase you dimensionally, so that you're eternal in time. You're empowered, E equals MC squared, from being captive in these physical bodies to being liberated from them. Mm-hmm. So you can go off and explore the universe with me. We can do such marvelous and fun things together. We can be father and daughter, father and son. You know, I didn't have a very good father. But now I've got the best.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really true for so many of us. I know it's true for you as well, Dee. We have the best. And he loves us. And he cares for us. And he is devoted to doing everything that he has done for his son, Dode, for all of us. And we can have that same confidence. So with that shared, I'm going to say goodnight. Happy Shabbat to one and all. We'll rejoin this time next week and walk through where these first five Mizmor lead so that we can have a better understanding of precisely what Father and Son have done to enable us to be part of the covenant family forevermore. This is the ultimate invitation that Dod and his father Yahweh are offering to Yisrael, to Yehudim. And for every goy like myself that wishes to capitalize, you are welcome as well. But exactly the same conditions apply. And I can tell you for certain that if you don't love Yisrael, if you don't care about God's people, if you don't celebrate Yahweh's name and his Torah guidance, you aren't welcome.
Yes.
This is his family. It's his home. And these are his conditions. And they are in our best interest as well as his.
Yes.
So happy Shabbat to one and all. I look forward to being with you this time next week. I'm sorry for Yisrael for what the world did in terms of voting against you at the United Nations. But man is despicable, which is why Yahweh is calling us out and away from the family of man, away from Babel, religion, and politics, to be with him and be part of his covenant family. May Yah bless. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, guys.
The hottest new social casino is finally here, and you need to see what all the excitement is about. Visit ZulaCasino.com. At Zula, you can play more than 500 Vegas casino-style games for free. Sign up today for an exclusive bonus. Be on the lookout for daily mega jackpots, exciting promotions, and giveaways. Zula Casino brings the thrill of Vegas to you no matter where you are.
Zula is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
Visit ZulaCasino.com. Today.
Save on Cox Internet when you add Cox Mobile and get fiber-powered internet at home and unbeatable 5G reliability on the go. So whether you're playing a game at home,
yes, cool,
or attending one live,
no!
You can do more without spending more. Learn how to save at cox.com/internet. Cox Internet is connected to the premises via coaxial cable. Cox Mobile runs on the network with unbeatable 5G reliability as measured by Ookla LLC in the U.S. 2H 2023. Results may vary, not an endorsement. Other restrictions apply.